really well.
Oh,
I'll see if I can
good.
dig up a I can send a recording out to you guys if you'd
Oh,
like.
that'd be
Yeah,
great. I'd love
that'd be
to
great.
see it.
Melba
Yes.
Harris, who's a friend of mine at church, and myself did the what's called the special music for Unity service on Sunday. So there's a
Yeah.
piece of music that we do before the sermon, and then there's a piece of music we do after the sermon's over. So
Oh, I'd love to see it.
the first song we did was something that I wrote myself called A Child's Prayer. It's about a
Oh.
little child's prayer to God and God's answer. And
Love to
then
hear it.
the second one was an a cappella version of a song called How Can I Keep From Singing? Pete Seeger introduced it as being
Oh, okay.
an old Quaker song, but actually it was written by a Baptist minister. But it still sounds like a
Okay.
Quaker song. So
That's
there's a
an
Baptist song
interesting
that a
combination.
Baptist song that sounds like a Quaker hymn.
Sounds great.
So I'll
I'm
send it
glad it went
along.
well.
Speaking
Hey.
of which, I sent you a lot of stuff last week. I hope it wasn't a burden or overpowering, but a couple of things that we covered were a couple of passages from Khaled Gibran about looking at dualities, pain and pleasure, good and evils, happy, sad, blah. But also being able to take a look at those dualities and recognize that they're, in some ways, they're two sides to the same coin. They are not opposing forces necessarily. And that as we work with ourselves on planet Earth, we experience both of those sides of things. The other question that continually comes up is, what about the bad stuff? What about evil? What about this? What about that? And I dug up a couple of different sources that I wanted to share with you that traditionally I go back to not to explain it, because we're not talking about an intellectual procedure of understanding with your thinking mind, but getting a sense of the fact that what we call evil or bad or horrible or awful is a very limited perception of things. Visually speaking, it's like looking at the backside of a tapestry and looking at one little piece where all the knots and the threads are sticking out, and not realizing, first of all, that that's just a tiny piece of the whole thing. And then if we were to flip the tapestry over, it looks much different from the backside, front side. So that what the readings were what I was had the purpose I had for the readings themselves was to get an idea or a sense that what we call bad or evil or make a judgment about through our, let's say, through our lower consciousness, through our personality selves, is really just a very, very limited viewpoint of what's really going on. And I can never understand what the complete picture with my thinking mind. It's too big. So if you ever have any questions or comments about what I might send out or what we do in class, please don't hesitate to get back in touch.
Okay,
I'd be more
good.
than willing to explore those with you either by email or by Zoom or some other way. Okay?
Yes.
Because, and so that's the distinction I'd like to start off with tonight. The one that we've talked about so many times before, and that is the difference between what we call our lower vibrational consciousness, our personality, our ego consciousness, that separate self that we identify with most of the day without even thinking about it, as compared to that divine consciousness that is non-judgmental, continually open to unconditional love, and does not get attached or hooked to anything, even being right about anything. And to recognize that as we do this work together tonight, there are going to be times when we're going to get sucked into our lower consciousness. Okay, just going to add that it's just part of the trip. So I'm not objecting to that, but what we were encouraging people to do is just become aware and say, oops, okay, I could have had a V8. I could see that differently. I could have looked at that differently. And as soon as you, for me, what it is as soon as I experience myself, what I call contracting, I can actually almost feel that in my physical body. But when I feel myself contracting or holding on to a particular belief or being right, then I automatically know, if I'm aware enough, that I know that I am in, and this is not a judgment, it's just a realization, I know that I'm in lower consciousness. I know that I'm back in my personality. I realize that I'm back in my ego. Again, not a bad thing, but recognizing that I have a choice. So be aware, and I'm saying this to myself as well, that even when we go through a spiritually oriented class like this, that we're still, I'm still going to fall back into that ego and personality occasionally. And again, that's not a bad thing. It's there to remind us that we have a choice. I can either look at this through lower vibration or I can look at this through higher vibration. And even though I don't know what higher vibration is going to see or what that is going to look like, I can open myself to that. Lord, that I may see this in a higher realm. Lord, that I may see this in a higher vibration. Because I don't know how to do that. I'm not quite sure that's going to happen, but I believe in the possibility that that can and will happen. And I also believe that the thoughts I'm holding on to or the actions that I'm holding on to not only affect me, but they affect every other living thing in the universe. So when I'm holding on to a thought of anger or fear or even worry, I'm affecting not just myself, but I'm affecting everyone and everything. My little self goes, oh shit, what do I do now? My divine self says, there's nothing to be afraid of. You can be as open as, you cannot, as the Course in Miracles put it, nothing of importance can be taken away from you. Nothing. Even whatever you think is important probably isn't. That doesn't mean you throw it away. You say, yeah, it's limited in its importance, but it's not a definition of who I am. I'm going to start on page 99, where we, I think we closed up last week. And I don't know about you all, but last week seems far away. Isn't that weird? Sometimes it seems like yesterday, and other times, like, were we really here last Tuesday? Oh, man. I had asked Margot that tonight. I said, Margot, did we have class last Tuesday? She goes, yeah. You were there. Oh, really?
And we missed you Sunday, Jerry.
Well, I missed you guys Sunday, too. But I appreciate you giving me a little bit of leeway, because that was an important part of my trip, is sharing that music. When you decide things as the small self, you perpetuate the old, because the small self knows itself in history. That's how we define it. We define ourselves through our past. Oh, that's just like dot, dot, dot. So even when we're reading a book like this, or A Course in Miracles, or some other spiritual path, even 12-step literature, we read it over, and maybe it's something new that we haven't seen or heard of before, but immediately what the mind does is it wants to fit that into a compartment that it's already familiar with. So it kind of dopes it down and says, oh, that's just like, that thought or that idea or that directive is just like dot, 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 just like what I learned 5 years ago. And of course it's not. But it's so easy to fall into that, wanting to categorize something and failing to recognize its newness. So I don't know about you guys, but I got to catch myself doing that all the time, or a lot. Oh, that's just like such and such, such and such. And I forget how this thing that I'm reading, this idea that I'm looking at, is something that's absolutely and creatively new and different than anything else I've ever come across. And to accept that newness, to be taught, to be teachable, is about opening ourselves up to the newness of thought and idea. If I always think it's just like something else, it's never going to get through. Just can't.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
I thought about when you just said that too. Also, when a stream of thought comes through, it's what I either unconsciously, because a lot of times for me, it's unconsciously that I've co-signed on, as opposed to kind of filtering it through my belief system. I just, oh, here comes the thought. Oh, and I just like co-sign on it. And then for me, I'll go back and say, oh, wait a minute, that's a lower level of energy. That's not consistent with, my belief system. So I have to remind myself and be aware every day, out in the marketplace, mm-hmm. in terms mm-hmm. of, where these thoughts are coming from. It's like, I think you mentioned this many, many times in your lectures, in terms of, it's like turning the knob on a radio. Oh, that's not for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not for me. So, yeah.
No, I think that's a good image. Okay. And if we, as a teacher, Jim, if we could recognize that same is true with our kids. And the younger that they are, the more of a, I won't say a blank slate, but the more everything is new, everything is fresh, everything is different. An eye of wonder, some people call it. Looking at myself, looking at the world with an eye of wonder, rather than desperation or judgment. And for, I don't know about you guys, but for me, sometimes that's an uphill kind of awareness. I'd rather be comfortable in my old definition. That's where the mind, where the lower self goes. I'd rather be comfortable in my definition.
I think the odd word there was comfortable, as opposed to being uncomfortable in that which I know not of.
I had a, I remember a priest friend of mine when I was a practicing Catholic. According to other people's terminology, I still am, but some people wouldn't recognize it that way. But I remember him saying, we were giving a retreat together for high school kids. And this guy, I love this guy. Father Nick Rice, his name was, and I haven't seen him in years. But anyway, I remember Nick saying, we end the Mass by saying, the peace of Christ be with you. Go in peace. And he said, the way I would like to end it? He said, I would like to say, the restlessness of Christ be with you. And be open to that restlessness that is open to constantly looking at something differently and new and in wonder. Never forgot that. The restlessness of Christ be with you. When you, it's interesting. We haven't got past the first sentence. I love it. When you claim the true self and your great identity, and you move the will to a place of union or reconciliation, balance with your divine purpose, your expression, the manifestation of the divine as who and what you are, begins to be how you know yourself in accord with the world that you express in. Let me read that again. I'll try to do it slowly. When you claim the true self and your great identity, your higher identity, your higher self, and you move the will, your power of choice, you move the will to a place of union or reconciliation with your divine purpose, or your expression, then the manifestation of the divine as who and what you are begins to be how you know yourself in accord with the world that you express in. You know yourself as being the truth of who you are. I am not a body. I have a body, but I'm not my body. I have a mind, but I'm not my mind. I'm not my thoughts. I have feelings and emotions, and yet I am not my thoughts. I am not my feelings. I am not my emotions. I am more than that. And the more that I am is much closer to a definition than all of the other stuff. I am more than that. And you step back from it and say, well, who's saying that? Who knows that I am more than my history, that I'm more than my thoughts, that I'm more than my ideas, that I'm more than my feelings? That is the claim. I know how I serve. Now, in the infinite light, in the infinite source, beyond time, beyond language, beyond any idea you could possibly hold of what it means to be, the absolute may be known in encounter, although not comprehended through data, through the filters, and with the language that the small self has used to describe his or her experience. The absolute may be known in encounter. In other words, our teachings and our learnings are all over the place. They're showing up all the time, continually showing up all the time. Let me share something with you, if I can find it here. Something I was working on. No, I don't see it here. Let me see how I can find. I don't want to hold you up, but here it is. I was doing working on a sermon. See if I can find this piece here. And I was watching a TV show a while this afternoon while I was messing around with my guitar. The show is called Young Sheldon. I'm not sure whether you're familiar with it or not, but it's a spinoff from The Big Bang Theory. It's really kind of interesting, this kid and all the dynamics that are going on with him. And he said this: according to Socrates, all knowledge exists within the student and just needs to be drawn out through skillful questioning. All knowledge exists within you. And all that needs to happen is that it needs to be drawn out for you to become consciously aware. The word educare from the Latin means to draw out of, to draw. You know, when I educate somebody, I am drawing out of them what is already there. Whereas for us, education is pounding in something instead of drawing out. And if we could get an idea of that same sense of what we're doing here on Tuesday evening or Sunday morning, that we are drawing out what is already there. Not inventing something, not even creating something new. Now, in the infinite light, in the infinite source, beyond time, beyond language, beyond any idea you could possibly hold of what it means to be, the absolute may be known in encounter. What you meet, what greets you when you're looking at a TV show, when you're looking in a mirror, when you're reading a book, when you're sitting here doing this, when you're talking to somebody, when you're watching the news, when you're getting ready for bed, when you get up in the morning. The absolute may be known in encounter. Every moment, every second is a learning experience. Whether you're watching a TV show and all of a sudden this thing jumps out at me, said, ah, it's just what I'm working on. It's right there. You may be known in encounter, however you are allowing yourself to be taught. Although not comprehended through the data, through the filters, and with the language that the small self has used to describe his or her experience, it's not there. It's in a higher consciousness. The willingness to experience infinity. Hear that. The willingness to experience infinity actually requires you to release the need for those filters, for the language, because the nature of infinity, while it holds everything and nothing at once, is the way it knows itself through you. Through you, not through your personality or your ego consciousness, but through the truth of who you are. When you hold a little baby and you look in those eyes and you see that infinity almost looking back at you, I think we've all experienced that. You look in those eyes and you get lost in them. And you say, well, they know what I've forgotten. They're not conscious of it. They're not saying, well, I know this. But they're just in that particular state of consciousness. They know what I've already forgotten. And of course, what's going to happen, they're going to follow the same trip we did. And they're going to forget. See, Margot remembered very early. I remember telling my therapist about Margot. And he said, yeah, there are some people like that. He said, most of us didn't wake up when we were 10. Most of us took another 40 or 50 years, all right, before we got there.
It's okay.
But I'm glad she did.
Jerry.
Yeah.
Just in what we're learning tonight about compartmentalizing and filters and data, yada, yada, I encountered a situation this weekend where I had to look at it and decide for myself, how was I going to react to it?
Okay.
I was walking the beach, and there was obviously some kind of a gay reunion going on this weekend. And my mind automatically wanted to go to a judgmental place because that's what I've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of doing that, it even says right here, move my to the will to a place of union and reconciliation. I needed to do that and reconcile with myself what the truth of this situation was in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to see people, no judgment. That was important to me because that was not filtered or data. That was me.
Right. And that's great, Diane.
Thank you.
Thank you for
sharing. It was hard. It was.
There's such a difference between, let's say, burying our judgment or saying, oh, no, mm-hmm. I shouldn't be judging that. So let me push that away. A big difference between that and then, but opening myself up to what you call the reconciliation, the openness. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. just not there. It's just not there.
Jerry?
Yeah, Paul?
I had a similar situation as Diane, not with a gay situation. I was raised with gays. So, and I want to really quickly say it's kind of interesting how my parents were very, well, my father threw my brother out when he found out he was gay, and I thought we were going to have a bloodbath in the house, quite frankly. Truly. Yeah. And my mother was irate and later not. And yet I never have had any feelings like that about gay. So mm-hmm. it wasn't what I was. So I was really could have been taught something else when Diane mentions being taught. So I find it interesting. Anyway, I had a situation similar to Diane this weekend. And I appreciate you guys listening to this because it took me by surprise at myself. Both of my daughters are very evangelistic. Well, one has becoming more so, my youngest one, who used to go to places with me and with my teachings. And that's fine. I have no problem with that. I usually, when I've been down here, go to this big mega church on events, Christmas, Easter, whatever, with her, because that she goes there. And so this Easter, we all went. And I've got to tell you, I had this. It's a new minister. Rick Warren used to be there, who's quite interesting. He's retired, but he had some interesting ideas and was interesting to. So I always grab whatever I could from the message. But I sat there right from the beginning. It started off the night before. My daughter's whole lingo is changing towards the evangelical statements. And I thought, okay, just all of a sudden, it's like I was amazed at how kind of shocked I was. And when we get into church, I sat there in complete obnoxious judgment. I mean, I was a mess. I am going, the music sounded like a double rock concert of Jesus music. And it was, this is a mega church. This isn't a little place. And it's just like, I mean, my way of being is more solitude, you know, like we should go now into the Zendo, you know, healing. I mean, that's what my heart feels inside. I've been in, well, of course, a Zendo, but I've been in Catholic churches. I love them. I have been in Jewish temples and I love them. I could almost go anywhere else and feel at home, except in an evangelical church. And then when I hear this statement, the young minister started off with a true statement of impermanence. We all die. And then it was, but where are you going to go from there? Are you going to go to heaven or are you going to go to hell? If you do not take the name of Jesus as your Lord and Savior, you will go to hell. It's as simple as that. Well, I'm telling you, inside, I'm having to use discipline like being in a dance studio to contain myself. And of course I would not embarrass, you know, my daughters, you know, that was the forefront. Anyway, as I thought about this later, and Jim, this conversation went on with Reverend James' group, but I had a response from somebody who laid it flat on the line for me, Reverend Dora. She said, Paula walked into this church, the music was too loud, the mess, and this was going on, and that was going on, and to top it off, she didn't like the message. And I thought, God, I was an obnoxious, judgmental person within myself. What can I learn from this? And like Diane, what can I reconcile within myself? Because these are my daughters. And this daughter, the youngest, I have been so soul connected to. All my life. I've known I have been with her before as whatever form she was. And then I had to really pray, go quiet within myself about this. And then it kind of came to me through the evening. And when I woke up in the morning, I thought, I have always been open about people taking their own path. It's neither here nor there to me. it does no harm. It's not people killing people. So I must let this go. I must not let this destroy, come between my daughter and I, where we cannot even talk. And I have to realize this is her path, and I'm grateful she has a path, because as my motto of saying we're walking across Grand Canyon on thin dental floss, we must have something to hold on to. And if you don't have a strong spiritual path, something within you. So I'm grateful. So I thought of that, and I'm grateful for it. And if going to a special event in the church, and that's the only time I go there, is what I need to do, I just must go and be calm with him. It's my time to practice, like driving back, Diane, light and peace to all around me. And so I've been better. I have felt better. But I tell you, Jerry, I almost sent you an email, and I almost sent Jim an email so I could talk to somebody, because I was so disrupted about how judgmental I felt at that moment about this form of their spiritual path, not my daughter, the ritualistic part of it, or whatever you call it. And I thought, oh my God, but I really saw myself in a quite an unpleasant light, shall I say. I did not like myself.
That's never a happy experience.
No, but again, as Diane said, and you mentioned it was a learning experience for me. A real learning experience for this different path, this different style of celebrating their beliefs. But it did prompt me into starting to delve into Emmett Fox's The Sermon on the Mount, because I realized I don't know a whole lot about Jesus.
It's a good way to start.
So if any of you ever have any words of constant encouragement for me,
you have it.
Please feel free to let me know.
Thank you for sharing that, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
I had a personal run-in with not responding to an experience the way I would have liked to fairly recently. I was taking a package back to UPS, something I ordered on Amazon that I was returning. So I just had to smack a label on it and bring it. Well, it happened to be a pretty big line of people there before I got into the UPS store. And this woman had just come out of a van. She was parked right in front of the store. And I had in my mind, I'm just going to drop this package off and I'm going to run a couple of more errands and I'm going to come home and do whatever. And this lady had something all packaged up. And she said, could you do me a favor? And all of a sudden, I was knocked out of my own little world. See, I had already made plans for the next 15 minutes. Would you do me a favor? And I hesitated a bit. And she said, I'd really appreciate it if you could take this package in for me, because I'm here with my daughter and I have to run a couple of errands and blah, 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 blah. And she must have seen this on my face, that I didn't want to do it. But then all of a sudden, I sort of consciously shift gears, say, well, let me be a holy person about this, and I'll take the package, because I know it wasn't a big deal. But I had already shown my reaction. It already came out energetically in my face, in my body language. And she said, oh, that's okay. I'll just go to another store. And I was standing there going, but. She was gone. And it was a huge wake-up call to me to realize that this person that I would like to be, gentle, generous, open, blah, 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 is not there all the time. That it is so easy. And I thank her for teaching me this. I still feel pretty crummy about it, but I thank her for there is still part of me that's wrapped up in that small self-centeredness that can just push people away or turn people off without me even recognizing it. She allowed me to recognize that. It was not a comfortable thing.
Here's our teachers.
That's right. Here's this again. Let me just share this again, Jim, and we'll come on, come online in a minute. The willingness to experience infinity actually requires you to release the need for those filters or the language, because the nature of infinity, while it holds everything and nothing all at once, is the way it knows itself through you. Not through your little self, but through your higher consciousness. Jim.
Yeah, I just, I always love what you share, Jerry. It's just in awareness, just in awareness. Because I had said to myself when I was first made aware of this teaching, when I gravitated towards this teaching, that what I didn't want to be was just some new thought zealot. And and it's a moment. It can be a moment to moment when I'm not aware of how I'm really kind of showing up. And I had experienced many years ago before I moved to Louisville, Paula. I was in the equivalent of Kroger's, Ralph's, in Encino, California, and it was about I don't know. I was making them back to my home. I just wanted to pick up some coffee. I know I didn't have any coffee. And it was about maybe 12 midnight or something. I just wanted just to pick up coffee. So I'm just walking, looking for coffee, you know, which I think they moved it. And all of a sudden this young man approached me and he said, "Are you saved?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Saved from what?" and I guess I said, "Hey man, I just want to get some coffee, man. I just want to get some coffee, you know." And I guess that really wasn't enough. So you know, he's like, tracks me down again. He said again the same thing. "Are you saved?" And my response is, "Saved from what?" And then I said, "Do you have a quota you have to meet?" So
he says that I'll be saved after I get coffee.
Right. I just kind of want to get home because I think he looked at this like, I'm just gonna really kind of melt him down. You know, mm-hmm. Before I leave this rouse, he is going to have one of my tracks. I said, no, man, I'm good. I'm just really kind of good. And it's just awareness, as Paula said, and the message is all of us have our own path or no path at all, whatever that, it doesn't really matter. And just allowing it to be and not making it a personal thing that I feel that I have to respond in some sort of way. So I just, Paula, much like yourself, you know, my late wife was Catholic, and she wanted to be married in a Catholic church. But she always made it clear to me. She said, "Jim, I'm a buffet Catholic." I said, "What does that mean?" "Well, I kind of pick and choose that which is important to me, you know, within Catholicism." So she was really open. So she said, do you mind getting married in Catholic Church? And I kind of, first I didn't understand why she's asking me that question. I was kind of like perplexed. And I had been to a lot of Catholic Church. I love going because it's quiet. I go there just to meditate. And so I said, well, Kim, you believe in God, don't you? She said, of course. I said, well, I do. I said, my experience at a Catholic church is that there's a lot of up and down and kneeling. That's a good opportunity for my family to get exercise. So, I didn't know why she was asking me that question. I really didn't know why she's asking me that question. I guess she wanted to just kind of see like if I were okay, because I was kind of open. I didn't really matter. It was just always just a building. It's just a building. So anyway, it's there's many paths.
It will. So to carry with it the language of old, to decide what should be based on your presumption of what infinity is to claim yourself as the small self and consequently know yourself in separation. Everything we've been talking about, the example Diane brought up and Paula, Jim, myself, was all about, is it unity thinking, one with my brothers and sisters, walking one another home, or is it separateness? And the small self lives in separateness. Just by its nature. It's not bad. It's just very limited. We are going to take a little trip with you now. Imagine for a moment that wherever you are, wherever you sit, wherever you are, is a moment in time. A single moment in time. And everything that may be experienced in this moment in time is available to you. Anything and everything in this moment in time is available to you. Now imagine, if you wish, that this is the only moment in time that you may ever know. Because in fact, that is true. Oh, just missed it. Here I am, wasn't I? Right? You may only know yourself or anything else in the present moment. Whether it's my daughter at church, whether it's a woman holding a package, whether it's a guy in a parking lot who wants to know whether I'm saved or not, okay? Or whether it's a gay pride parade on the beach. You may only know yourself or anything else in the present moment. Everything else is history or expectation. That's a classic sentence. That is kind of a summary of all spiritual thought in one particular place in a very simple way. Everything else is history or expectation. Everything else is either history or expectation. Anything other than the moment we are in right now is either history or expectation. Wow. I never heard it put that succinctly. When you expect anything, here's the flip side of it. When you expect anything, use history to outline the expectation. In other words, I use my past, as the Course in Miracles put it. When I move the past into the present, I create a future just like my past. That's what they're saying here in a little bit of a different way. Everything else is history or expectation. When you expect anything, you see history to outline the expectation. And while you may do this in the present moment, your escapade is actually in your idea of the past or what you deem the future. So in this present moment, the only moment there can ever be, we wish you to expand, to become larger than you think you are. Imagine that the body itself, which is source, creation, in vibration, is expanding and the energetic field is expanding as well. Imagine that the being that you are is expanding beyond your idea of what is possible to expand to. Imagine, if you wish, that the being that you are has grown so much that you cannot see the outline of what you thought you were. You have become an ocean or a sky in vibration. Now, from this perspective, where the rules have already been broken, because there aren't any anymore, you can begin to understand that in this moment, beyond the limitation of form, you may begin to experience yourself beyond the idea of time. Why don't we use that as our meditation this evening? So I'm going to suggest you put your stuff down. Take a couple of breaths, just relax. And I'd like you to imagine, if you'd like, you don't have to do this, you can just shut off my voice or shut off your mind and just remain in the quiet if you'd like. As a meditation, you can follow my voice if you'd like. Imagine that you are lying down on a hillside on a warm summer evening. And you're looking up at the sky. It's a clear, clear evening. So as the sky becomes darker, the stars become brighter. And you feel or sense your spiritual self floating out of your body for a moment. You're still anchored to your physical body by the silver cord, so you're not going to lose anything. But you float up into the sky that is full of stars. And you begin to recognize you are at home there, even more than you might have been at home at planet Earth. And you notice in one of your hands is a huge transparent plastic bag. And the directive comes to you that you are to take everything you could possibly think of about yourself and throw it in the bag. So you think of some of your identities as a mother or a father or a grandparent, and you take that and you throw that in the bag. You take a look at the history of your religious beliefs, spiritual beliefs, even the path you've been on, and you throw that in the bag. You look at your professions, the things you've done to earn money, get a job, you throw all of that in the bag. All of your education, all of those plaques on your wall. All of those things perhaps you're proud of, and maybe all of those things you're sorry for, you throw them in the bag. Your body, your attachment to it, your mind, your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, all of that get thrown into the bag. Anything you could possibly think of in your past or your expectations, throw it in the bag. And when you've thrown everything you possibly could think of in the bag, you let it go. And you watch it float away into space. until all that is left is you with none of your stuff. And you allow yourself to be with that for a while. Now imagine, if you wish, that this is the only moment in time you may ever know, because in fact that is true. You may only know yourself or anything else in the present moment. Everything else is history or expectation. Experience this vibration of your being, of no attachment, of no definition, of no self. The Buddhists like to say, no self, no problem. And so you allow yourself to breathe that into your being. Suck it up like a sponge. It is everything and nothing. And you are it. Become aware again of the rhythm of your breathing. And even when you are back in awareness, allowing your soul, your spirit to come back to you lying on the hillside, become aware of the warmth of the grass you are lying on, the deep darkness of the sky, the lights of the stars shining on you. You get up from that hillside, stretch a bit, and then come back to your awareness of being in this room. Carrying with you a sense of the nowness of things. And when you're ready to, you can stretch again and open your eyes. So thank you all again for being here for us, for one another.
Thank you, everyone.
You're more than welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, guys. Peace.
Thank you all.
Same bad time. Yeah. Same bad channel.
Thanks, everyone.
Oh yeah.
Have a safe trip, Diane.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I'll need that.
Okay, be home soon. Okay.